This is Olympic champion Scott Hamilton. Yes, the real Scott Hamilton. And you're listening to the other Scott Hamilton show, where you should be entertained, informed, and maybe even amused. Just don't expect any backflips. I mean, have you seen him skate?
Joining us now to say Tama Hotline, he covers South Carolina for the state newspaper in Columbia. Ben Portnoy, welcome back.
What's going on, guys? Appreciate you having me.
I'm wondering this, Ben. I'm looking at this list of reports. Good reporting, by the way. Journalism is important in this day and age, unlike any other time in our history. But I'm looking at some of these violations, and I can't help but shake my head and go, "Are you serious, NCAA? Are you kidding me?" Assistant coach mentioned the name of a recruit's parent in a social media post. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that to keep in mind for a lot of people is, like, you know, 16 seems like a lot. Now, granted, that's over a two-year span. That's from, you know, January 1, 2020 to December 31st, 2021. So it's a pretty wide period, and this stuff happens. I think that, like, you know, the misconception is that, like, this is – I don't want to say it's not a big deal, but, you know, these things happen. And a lot of it's sort of, like you said, it's nickel and dime stuff. It's not, you know, anything overbearing. It's not, like – you know, it's not like the NCAA is about to hammer South Carolina. You know, this isn't, you know, a former South Carolina basketball coach getting paid whatever it was, $10,000, you know, like a couple of years, or paying a kid $10,000, whatever it was a couple of years ago. You know, like this is sort of minor stuff and pretty run-of-the-mill stuff. And these things tend to happen. And I think the biggest thing is most of it tends to happen just because there's a miscommunication between a coach and a athletic department official or that kind of thing that, you know, you forget to ask for permission before you do something, basically. And that's kind of how these things happen. I think that that's the sort of biggest takeaway, is that this is just a pretty sort of normal thing that happens. And I think you would say, you know, if you looked at just about every program in the country, and especially, you know, every Power Five school in the country with as many sports as they sponsor, like, you'd find these kinds of things.
I'm trying to go through here and find my favorite one. And I like the one with the women swimming and diving that a recruit practiced with a local sports club prior to meeting the 50-mile radius residency requirement. It's between that and, I think, for the equestrian, I didn't even realize they had an equestrian team. Coaching staff member provided transportation to student athlete participating in an outside competition. I'm presuming that's airfare. They buy him a bus ticket. What's that all about?
Yeah, you know, that's about as much explanation as we got. But, yeah, it's, you know, like you said, I mean, it's pretty minor stuff. It's definitely interesting. I mean, it's not quite as exciting as, I guess, what was it, a couple of years ago? I think South Carolina had to talk to the NCAA because of they provided a cookie cake to a recruit or something. So there wasn't anything quite that exciting or that fun. But, yeah, you know, a few sort of minor things here and there for sure.
We're joined by Ben Portnoy of the state. You can follow him on Twitter at bportnoy15. Ben, how did you all find out about this? Did they tell you that there was some self-reported violations and then you filed the FOIA, or do you do just a regular FOIA submission, just fishing around, and this is what you came up with?
Yeah, this is a pretty regular thing. I think, you know, at least, when I was in school, this was something I was taught to do, you know, about once a year. And, you know, figured I'd get ahead of, or sort of backtrack toward 2020 since I hadn't seen anything on it since then. So kind of just covered my bases and filed a FOIA request, and this is kind of what turned up.
when did they report these?
So the date that you see in the story is the date that they were filed, is the day that they were reported. So that's sort of that gives you a little bit of a timeline as far as when these things were happening, but yeah, that's pretty much the timeline.
Okay. So the ones with regards to football then, I guess that would absolutely go back to the Will Muschamp era. So Shane Beamer's just sitting back and going, okay, I'm not even going to acknowledge any of this.
Football's going to be under Beamer. It's May 2021. So
Would
have been just after Muschamp. So yeah. But again, like we said before, like these are super minor things. Like like you mentioned, an assistant coach mentioning a parent's name in a social media post. I mean, that's a pretty basic thing. And, you know, these things tend to happen.
Well, Ben, the big news, obviously, in the offseason was Spencer Rattler coming to South Carolina and Austin Stogner, and Shane Beamer continues to work the transfer portal. And he had a couple of tweets he sent out yesterday. My producer, Trent, was, he noticed when he sends out the hashtag welcome home that usually follows up a big announcement. What are you hearing? You getting any news out of Columbia about maybe some more players coming in through the portal?
Yeah, I think that's the general understanding, is that, you know, South Carolina is at a point with, And I think you can see this with most programs after 1 year, 2 years, or even three, you know, with a new coach, right? Like, programs are just trying to upgrade their talent, and I think you're seeing that with South Carolina. Now, you know, the scholarship picture gets a little crazy, and that's a whole – you know, there are people paid a lot more than me to sort of figure those numbers out and make them work. But, you know, that's the thing that I think Shane Beamer's trying to do right now. I think that, you know, I would expect them to add a few more spots. If I'm not mistaken, they should have two or three spots still left in the 2022 class, and they can always bleed that over into the 23 class if kids, depending on when kids sign, for example, like if they don't sign until August or whatever it is, you know. There are ways that they can kind of get around that and make those scholarships count toward, you know, the 2023 class. So I think right now, like, what you're seeing is South Carolina is trying to bring in guys who they think can, you know, upgrade the talent that they have. Now, you know, I think that Shane Beamer said it the other day is that, you know, South Carolina was, you know, looking for players and looking to upgrade and that they wanted to bring in the best players. So, you know, you're seeing that, and I would expect that to continue.
Other than the quarterback position, what position group do you see the most improvement 2022?
Yeah, I mean, I think that tight end slash receiver, I mean, I guess you could throw Austin Stogner in there as a receiver. He's a guy that I think makes a big difference there and gives them a big target to work with. Antoine Wells from James Madison, he's the guy that I circle out of this group that they've brought in as far as transfers that I think is going to be really, really good. You know, he's a guy that you know, caught, I think had 1,200 yards or a little over 1,200 yards receiving at 15 touchdowns last year. I mean, you know, I talked to his former quarterback at James Madison who finished, you know, pretty high up in the record books after playing with Antoine for about a year and a half, basically. And, you know, the guys on the team, James Madison, compared him to Jamar Chase. And, you know, Tosh Lupoi's brother, Vinny Sinceri's brother, who coached at Alabama as a quarterback's coach at James Madison, and said that, you know, this is a guy who's every bit as good as some of those receivers that Alabama's had the last few years. So that's a guy that I circle and I think can make a big difference. I mean, I think Josh Vann had a really, really good year in 2021, but, you know, South Carolina was a little bit thin as far as options. And, you know, between Antoine Wells and Stogner, and, you know, you bring in some other guys too, I mean, this offense, at least skill position-wise, looks like it's going to be in a much better place than it was this year.
You know, it's actually pretty incredible, Ben. I mean, we go into this past season, and the over-under, I think, for wins, predicted wins, was around 3-4 games, something like that. And, of course, they surpass that, and they go on and win the bowl game. And they're only 9 points short of actually having a 9-win season. That, in and of itself, was incredible and creates a lot of momentum going into 2022. But then you do get a Rattler, you get a Stogner, you get a good recruiting class, and they just keep bringing in more quality players. I know it's way too early, but I want to get your take on this. Given everything that's happened over the last 9 months, where would you see them ranked in the SEC East in the preseason? Could you see them being the third best team in the conference, or in the division, rather?
Yeah, I'll provide the caveat that I picked this team to go 4-8 last year, so I guess, you know, what do I know? But I think that, you know, when you look at this team, I mean, I think that they're a lot better than they were on paper last year, and that makes a big difference. The question is, you know, where do they steal those wins, right? Do they beat Kentucky, who should be pretty really good again with Will Levis coming back next year? Can they beat Tennessee? Getting Tennessee at home obviously helps a little bit. You know, your away games are Florida this year. You trade out Auburn for Arkansas. I'm not sure that's necessarily a better situation, having to go to Arkansas, I think, week 2. So it's a little bit of I don't want to say it's a tougher schedule, but it's probably a pretty comparable schedule to what you had a year ago. So, you know, I think that this is probably, I mean, this team should win somewhere between 7 and 8 games at the worst. I think your floor is probably 6. If that's not the case, I think you see somewhere between 6 and 9. I know that's a wide range, but, you know, I think they could finish 3rd in the East. I think that, you know, given what Florida is right now, you know, that's a program that's rebuilding a little bit, you know, given a new coaching staff and all that comes with that. You know, you look at Georgia. Georgia's going to continue to do its thing. I mean, you kind of assume that Georgia's going to keep doing its thing until, you know, kind of proven otherwise. And, you know, Kentucky's been rolling. So I think the question becomes is, can South Carolina jump ahead of Tennessee? Can it jump ahead of Kentucky? I think it's pretty fair to say that South Carolina probably finishes about 3rd or 4th in the SEC East. And, you know, considering they were picked 6th a year ago, I mean, that's a pretty good spot to be. you know, all things considered. I mean, if they finish behind, say, a Georgia, a Kentucky, and Tennessee, I mean, that's a pretty good spot to be, and you're probably a 7 or 8-win team at that point, and you're probably knocking on the door of a top 25 ranking.
You know, I love it that it's January 20th, and I'm sitting here looking at the schedule, and I'm already thinking, you know what, I think Ben's right. I think that October 8th game at Kentucky could set the narrative for the entire season, because they'll be coming off, well, you've got Georgia State, presumably a win, Charlotte, presumably a win, SC State, presumably a win. They could have 3 wins up until that point, go into Kroger Field, get a 4th win heading into a bye week. Then you're looking at a pretty sweet stretch to wrap up the season. I agree with you on that, Ben. I think that could set the tone for the entire year.
Yeah, I mean, and even those, you know, that's the thing that's tricky about this year even, and, you know, we saw it with East Carolina this year. I mean, that ended up being, what, a 7 or 8-win East Carolina team that South Carolina beat at East Carolina. Sorry, a lot of Carolinas there to throw at you. But, but you know, that was a tough Group of Five matchup. I mean, Georgia State at home, going to have Sean Elliott coming back to coach at South Carolina against South Carolina. I mean, that's a tricky game on paper. I mean, there's a lot of South Carolina kids on that Georgia State roster that didn't get recruited by the Gamecocks. And I think that, you know, that's a game that, you know, if South Carolina comes out flat, they could catch themselves napping a little bit. And even Charlotte, I mean, you know, look, I'm not saying South Carolina's going to lose those games, but, you know, Will Healy's done a really good job upgrading the talent there. And you get a kind of the same thing. I mean, Charlotte recruits a lot of South Carolina kids. There's a lot of Power Five transfers, that kind of thing. So, you know, as far as G5 teams to schedule, like, South Carolina didn't exactly do itself any favors with the teams that it did schedule.
Ben, let me ask you this before we let you go. What is the future for Zeb Nolan? Is he now a member of the staff?
He is. That's the understanding we've gotten. He's going to be working with quarterbacks as a GA. So I guess we've kind of finally come full circle on that, that you know, maybe the most famous graduate assistant in college football is now actually going to be a graduate assistant and will be on the staff going forward.
He was transfer quarterback, turned grad assistant, turned quarterback, turned folk hero, turned grad assistant again. Zeb Nolan, God bless him. He covers South Carolina for the State newspaper in Columbia. You can follow him on Twitter at BPortnoy15. Ben, appreciate you coming on this morning, man.
Yeah, appreciate y'all having me. Thanks again.
All right, it's Ben Portnoy of the State joining us.